Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for KER Politics. Actually, we're not calling it the KER Report. We're going to start this particular show every single week with Jim McKinney. Jim, by the way, was honored just very recently by the county. He was named by the Republican Party in the county as the Republican of the Year. Good for you, Jimmy, is all I can say. Jim, we're going to tell you've done a great job. I'll tell you, I hope they're paying you a lot of money with the time you're putting in on this thing.
No money.
I know. Jimmy, having said that, I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the first, the first portion of the Biden office. It's not looking very good. Let's talk about what China is doing right now and how the United States is supporting China in terms of OAC's big deal, which is the environmental crisis. China's not doing such a great job, are they?
No, they're not. The Biden administration has definitely put the politically charged climate control agenda as one of its top priorities. Biden appointed John Kerry, former Secretary of State under the Obama administration, to be his national climate representative to negotiate and to go out and discuss this and actually build coalitions and support for the climate agenda. But what's happened is we've got information that's coming out now from Rhodium Group, which is a nonprofit research group out of New York, shows that China is producing now 27% of all global carbon emissions and more than all industrialized nations in the world combined. The US is number two at 11%, the EU at 6.4%. So they are absolutely devastating the climate. John Kerry goes over there and basically says, oh, yeah, we've got a great deal. We don't care about your human rights. We don't care about your economic, or we may disagree on your economic issues and your military issues. And there may be tension out there, but we agree on climate because you're going to reduce. The Chinese have said that they're going to reduce their coal emissions. And that basically statistically would be impossible for them to do. And we've got the numbers to back that up.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it's really interesting how in China's back pocket, I believe the United States is. I want to talk a little bit about that from a COVID standpoint, Jim. Jim, do you agree with me that the COVID situation, the COVID medical crisis, was in fact started by mainland China?
Well, we can look at the facts of what happened with COVID. And of course, we saw the early absolute catastrophic response from the Chinese officials when the pandemic began. There was a lot of media information that was leaked out there that showed these massive lockdowns. And then, of course, the initial fear created tremendous ripples throughout the world and the globe. And then people began taking these strong actions because here's a virus that people didn't have much information on. There was very fearful. And a very well orchestrated media campaign that basically inflamed the world and the world's media. And when they did that, they were successfully manipulating U.S. views and policy in order to try and stop this crisis. And of course, as we've gotten a lot more information out there, we realize that it just was nowhere near as severe a problem as we initially saw, though we've continued to, politically, people have continued to use it as a powerful tool. And I think that falls directly into the Chinese hand. We're beginning to see significant global supply chain issues with shutdowns and inability to get raw materials. Some of those raw materials controlled by China, which is slowing actual manufacturing both here in the United States and globally. There's a massive increase in inflation on products. I will tell you this, building a house right now, what a year ago was $16 for a 4x8 sheet of OSB, half-inch OSB, is now $80. That's unbelievable. So costs are going up. I can't get a KitchenAid US-built dishwasher because they just stopped production because they don't have the materials to do it and they're so far behind. And the COVID lockdowns have created this tremendous problem. And I think that benefits in the long run China did very well last year economically, had large, very fast growth, where the rest of the world was in very big, you know, having big troubles. And of course, we're seeing the with the unemployment numbers that were released today, the incredibly low unemployment rate. Employment numbers, 266,000 new jobs. We're expecting way more than that as we come out of this problem. But unfortunately, you know, this is really benefiting China. And of course, they're not meeting global emissions requirements. They're not meeting anything, you know, in our economic issues, you know, and it's really hurting the United States right now.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about one thing right now, and that really has to do with the cost of materials, and also, even more importantly, the availability of materials. We are doing some major remodeling to our home right now, and we are finding every time that we speak with the contractor, they are saying it's going to be another 2 weeks. It's going to be another 2 weeks. I simply cannot get materials in a timely fashion right now. I can imagine, Jimmy, what you're going through in terms of your home. It's got to be the most frustrating thing in the world.
No, it is. It's very frustrating, but it's happening across the board around the country in many, many different areas. So, you know, not only with construction materials, but electronics. We've seen the problem with microchip producers.
Right.
There's just a tremendous impact globally. And part of it's lag time because of the shutdowns. Part of it is the fact that the government had pumped so much money that doesn't exist, by the way, into the economy that it's beginning to start to create these conditions where people don't even want to go to work. So you can't get employees. People are staying at home because they're afraid of COVID. The actual production is being hampered by restrictions. So across the board, it's impacting tremendously where, you know, the Chinese basically back to work and the United States has not. And we're seeing that very clearly right now. And it's going to have a big, both long-term military impact. It's going to have a long-term economic development impact. It's going to have a long-term energy impact. It's going to really diminish American capacity to compete and potentially make us subservient to 1.4 billion people being controlled by 200 Central Committee members, the Communist Party, authoritarian control. And of course, being facilitated by U.S. global corporations that want to expand into that market.
100%. You know, de Blasio issued a situation in New York yesterday where they were talking about reopening restaurants, moving up to much, much, much more opening in terms of the restaurants. And what I thought was interesting is the fact that the restaurants cannot hire workers right now, simply because they are getting too much money from the government and they don't have to work. I have to say, Jim, whoever is behind this is doing a phenomenal job in terms of shutting down the United States economically.
No, it's very devastating, and we're going to see the ramifications for a long period of time. And of course, the mental health issues that go along with this and the stress and the politics that are dividing people right now, very dangerous for our future.
We're going to talk quite a bit, actually, about not only the politics that are dividing people in the United States, but we're going to talk primarily about the mental health issues right now that are absolutely killing the United States. I know you mentioned in a conversation we had off mic that we have had suicides in our area among children who are getting so depressed they simply cannot handle the situation. Jimmy, I hate to be talking about negative things like this, but it's the way that it is. Thanks, bud. Get you back soon.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Jimmy's got some really interesting things to say about what's going on right now. To me, that's very sad. Having said that, though, I'm talking with Richard Postma-Doc right now real quick. We're not going to talk politics. We're going to talk about what's going on right now in the precious metals sector. Doc, when I was head over heels in precious metals probably 5 or 6 years ago, one of the factors that I felt very strongly, and I was correct most of the time, had a positive impact on the price of the precious metals, specifically gold and silver, was what's going on politically. Logic tells me right now that what's going on politically in the United States is absolutely terrible. And I have to tell you, I think it's going to be very, very positive for the price of the precious metals. Do you have an opinion?
Well, for gold, I think geopolitical events have short-term impacts on pricing for the precious metals, especially for gold. You can get an impact that way, but ultimately I feel that it's financial situations that eventually gets gold moving. And I think we're consolidating here. I think we've been moving down since last year in August. And I think we're having a couple months up here, and I think this month looks pretty good, but then we're going to have to get careful for gold again, because I think on the long-term charts, it's moving up to hit that downtrend line on the upper part, and we can move another $40 here, but then I think things get dicey for gold. The geopolitical events can impact it, but I think only short-term. It has to be ultimately the financial aspects that really impact gold. And down the road, I see those as being a very good instigator for gold after we get through with this consolidation move down, where gold will once again start another move higher. But that's going to be down the road yet. We have to work through this for a while, I feel, Al.
Give me a time frame, will you, Doctor?
I think we can bottom out pretty much on this by the end of the year and into the first part of next year. And then I think we can trade sideways for a while, but then we're going to be in the position after that to get movement. And that could happen toward the end of next year or into 2023. But I think by that time, we have a real good opportunity to move this market much higher. It takes time for monetary madness to impact these markets. When everybody sees the amount of money printing that has been done, gold doesn't react necessarily right then. There's a delay to this sort of thing, and it takes time for that to work through the system, and I think it's going to take a number of months yet. And then I think we make a move higher that's going to be the one that everybody's been waiting for.
You know, I have to tell you, I think one of the most positive aspects for the precious metals, gold and silver right now, really, quite frankly, is the Progressive Party. And it's because of the reason that you just gave right now. The stupidity that's going on right now as a result of the new executive branch, and I'm speaking entirely of the money printing situation right now, is absolutely amazing to me. And basic economics, Doc, tells me that when you go into debt that much, the amount of debt that is being amassed by the United States right now is pure stupidity. It is simply impossible to service that debt for any length of time. More and more people are going to realize that. I would have to say that the mainstream media is going to have to start reporting that. because the situation is not something that America, because of the new executive branch, can work their way out of effectively. It's making life a lot more comfortable for the average American right now, but for the future of America, the country that I love, it's nothing but negative future activities. Any comments?
Yeah, and we're seeing the decline of a nation that had such great opportunities lying ahead of it, and it's as much internal decline as it is external.
Yeah,
and it's something that we've watched through history with the decline of every great nation that seemed to rule the world for a while, whether you go back to Rome and Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan, all these people, and then you had Britain and France and Portugal and Spain, most recently over the last couple hundred years, and then it became our time in the 40s when the dollar became the supreme currency. Every nation eventually shoots itself in the foot. And if you look at the footprint of history, they all go through the same type of activities. They repeat it, and it's almost natural, Al, because people don't learn anything.
Right.
And they make the same stupid mistakes over and over and over. And we're doing the same thing as a nation. We're outgrowing our supply lines. We have military personnel all over the world, and they're talking about pulling back from Afghanistan, Iraq. Well, they're not doing it because they're smart people, but they know they can't afford it anymore. That's the problem. And that's another area that they consistently have to feed the monster, and that's the military.
Yep.
And they feed the monster by creating demons out there, like Putin and others that are going to swallow us up. Well, Putin's never going to swallow us up. But they create that demon to justify spending more money for the military. And it's not to protect us as Americans. And so every nation goes through this. And unfortunately, gold is going to really have a big move with the amount of money that they're printing and the fiscal irresponsibility, because we're stealing consistently from the future because of our debt. We have to keep printing even more money all the time.
I hate to say you made a very valid point, and I appreciate it. Unfortunately, we have people who are paying our radio stations to carry our show, so we have to take a break for them. Dr. Postma, thank you for your time, sir.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for the second half of KER. Not really politics, but the KE Report. An article that was in the Seattle Times this morning caught my attention. The Seattle Times wrote a lengthy article on how the drama community in the Seattle area possibly would become defunct because of all the psychological problems that are being caused right now by the COVID situation. And when I talk about the COVID situation, what I'm talking about is the uncertainty and the anger. The author of this article feels strongly that this could cause the destruction, permanent destruction, of the drama community, which is well known and very active in the Seattle, Washington area. Got Dr. Charles Page on the line with me right now, and we're going to find out exactly what he thinks about this. Chuck, what's going on in terms of any validity to this particular thesis?
Yes, I believe there's a lot of validity. validity to it. Now, I don't know a lot about drama, but I know a lot about healthcare, and I'm telling you, it's really taking its toll on healthcare workers. ICU nurses, doctors had to come to terms with the pandemic in a different way. You know, it's one of those things. I think we're still going to see, you know, kind of the effects of this even long after, long after the virus is in the rearview mirror. I mean, I think people have experienced, you know, feelings of, you know, first of all, loneliness and isolation from, right. You know, everything. I think also this, like you said earlier, Al, this uncertainty, this belief of just not knowing what's going to happen next, this loss of control. And so it's really kind of made us think a lot about our mortality. You know, I think it's really, in a sense, you think about it, every interaction you have with people, you, in the back of your mind, you may be thinking, will I get COVID from this person, or will I give COVID to this person? You know, kind of makes you, in a sense, a little bit paranoid. So, you know, and I don't have any great answers to that. I do believe that we need to, you know, there's some simple things that we can do. You know, on a physical, you know, because everything's connected, I believe. Our spiritual, our emotional, our physical, you know, once again, trying to get some exercise, trying to get good sleep and rest, focusing on the relationships that we have, you know, even if we're a little isolated, just trying to, you know, FaceTime people or, you know, or write letters to people. And then I think the emotional standpoint of sitting back and taking some time and doing some journaling and really writing down our thoughts and emotions, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, I always like to go and read the Psalms. When I feel overwhelmed and depressed, I can go back and, you know, one of the neat things about that particular book in the Bible is it talks, you know, people share their emotions and what they're experiencing. And a lot of times you read the Psalms and it's very raw emotions and how they're going through those things and how they're coping with those things. I think that helps. I think all those things, and also probably limiting the media that we're exposed to. I'll tell you, what we feed our minds on makes a world of difference.
You want to explain that for me, Doc?
Well, you know, you show me your focus, I'll show you your future. And so often, especially with the media, we get all of these mixed messages about things. And I really believe the media today, and you and I both, Al, are involved in the media, but a lot of times the media will take the exception and will exaggerate that exception and make it sound like, you know, because it gets the headlines. You know, that's the thing that's going to get people to watch and to listen is that drama. And so kind of keeping in mind that we're getting all these mixed messages from the media and limiting that, I think it really helps as far as our focus. I know I've really cut back on the amount of media that I've been watching on every aspect, political, COVID, whatever. And I'm so much more happier because I'm able to focus on, you know, what's happening on the inside and what's happening in my relationships and my body, rather than focusing on what's happening out there. But, you know, also exercising has made a big difference. You know, we know a lot about COVID, about the people who are not doing well with COVID are the people who are obese and are overweight. And so, you know, trying to work on those things and work on our health, you know, if we do get the COVID virus, maybe we'll be able to, to move through it a little better.
You know, the only thing I can say is one thing I've learned all my life is, as Winston Churchill said during one of his, what I would have to say, almost genius-like speeches to the British people during the Second World War, he said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." I have learned that to be so true, Chuck, that I just, I that's kind of one of the stalwart foundations of my life. And that's one of the reasons that I'm about to say what I'm about to say is that I think this COVID pandemic thing and the isolation that has resulted, et cetera, among other things, I think it was pre-planned, I would say, by the Chinese. And I think that our government seems to be, in this case, actually supporting that as a weapon of war, because it's a very effective weapon of war. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to express just one thing here. That's only Al Corland's opinion. That are certainly not Dr. Charles' opinion. If it is, he can express it, but who knows? I don't want to put words in his mouth at all. And it matters to me very little what he thinks about this particular situation. I really believe it's true. Chuck, you're on.
Well, Al, I don't really know what right. the source of it is. Once again, giving people benefit of the doubt, I think it was just an accident that happened in the lab because of poor quality control. But okay. I want to just have people, once again, we can focus on that and get paranoid about it. But once again, just like to reinforce what you said earlier about our fears and Winston Churchill, 90% of the things that we worry about never happen.
Correct.
And those 10% that do aren't half as bad as what we think they're going to be. Once again, just keeping that in mind as we're going through all of these things, if we just keep going and we just focus on, all these things, our spirituality, our relationships, our health, and our emotions, and keeping all that where it needs to be, we're going to be okay. I'll tell you, I see this all the time. Al, there's a lot of things that are worse than dying. And I think one of the worst things is just existing, of not really enjoying the life that you have. And I'll tell you, I see so many senior adults that, they're even in their 90s and they're stuck at home, and they're making the best out of their situation. So I just encourage people, to focus on the things that they can change and not on the things that they can't change.
Well, as they say in AA, give me the wisdom to know the things that I can't change and those that I can, yep. and give me the courage yep. to know the difference. Boy, being somewhat active in AA as I have been over the years, I have to tell you, that serenity prayer really tells the truth the way it is. We're down to about, we're down to 40 seconds. Chuck, you want to wrap it up with some words of wisdom?
Well, I would just say once again, focus on the things that you can change. And, and realize, too, that everybody is going to respond to this a little bit differently, And so we've got, different responses. We've got the, the hide in the basement response, and we've got the go out and have a rally response.
Right.
And, once again, we need to realize we need to give people a little space to deal with this the way in their own way. We have to give people a little bit of grace.
There
you know what
go.
I'm saying? And
understanding we can't give grace, but God can, and that's the most effective deterrent that there is.
Well, but maybe God
Chuck,
can give us
Chuck,
some grace
gotta
and know
run.
How to deal with folks.
Chuck, gotta
absolutely.
Gotta take a commercial break. Hey, welcome in. Time to wrap up KER Politics, a.k.a. the KA Report. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the COVID situation that actually the Dr. Chuck and I just talked about in the prior segment. But Chuck is a medical doctor. I'm not talking to my friend John Huber. John Huber is a nationally known PhD psychologist, very, very well qualified to talk on this particular subject. So we got a medical doctor's opinion, and now we've got a psychological opinion from Dr. John Huber. Dr. Huber, I read an article this morning in the Seattle Times that said that the mental anguish being caused by COVID could very well go to the point where the mental damage could be so bad to the drama community in Seattle that it may very well shut down. That's a pretty dramatic newspaper article, John. You want to comment on that?
Well, I think it's pretty accurate, actually. I mean, when we look at this before COVID, we estimated that 1 in 5 Americans had some mental health issue.
Right.
And, you know, as a psychotherapist, one of the things we do is we understand behavior. And changing your behavior changes how your brain functions. Just like changing the neurochemistry of your brain can actually change your behavior. So one of the things we do with our patients is teach them to not do the behavior that is being represented by depression, which is typically isolation, staying away from people, not communicating, not looking people in the eye and communicating face-to-face, not coming in physical contact with everybody. And lo and behold, it turns out if you do those things, you actually change your brain chemistry to that of somebody being depressed and anxious. So by isolating everybody and telling everybody to do the behaviors that as therapists we tell our patients not to do, to get them to recover, we're actually pushing mental health issues onto everyday people. And then you add the things like, you know, our industry shut down, I can't pay rent right now, the everyday doldrums of being isolated with maybe people that you don't really want to be isolated with all the time, your roommates, and in some cases, your family members. And it is very destructive. There's some evidence out there that suggests that now maybe over 50% of Americans are exhibiting mental health problems, from anxiety to depression to post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as social discord, and, you know, divorces are way up, plus, you know, alcohol consumption is up over 400%. So there, all these things are multiplying and multiples of mental health issues, and it just compounds that. Now you add the fact that you have a very typically more open to their feelings and emotions of actors. You know, they learn about that. They learn how to draw on their emotions to change their characters in different plays and different storylines. And a lot of times that makes them more vulnerable to a lot of these things, because the normal walls of defense that we put up as a human being to protect ourselves have kind of been chipped away at through all that acting and trying to become a better player in the theater scene. And it is devastating to these people. I have friends in New York who are in theater, and they're suffering so badly. And then the fact that there's no production going on. You know, we're talking now, I think I got an email from one of my friends from New York, said that there's going to be limited shows starting up in September, and they're so excited, but there's not enough jobs for all the actors. I mean, there never was, but now there's really limited jobs that are available for people. So it's overcoming all of, you know, the good efforts that we put together to have normal, positive life. And isolating ourselves is really one of the worst things we can do, period.
You know, I got to tell you, that brings up an interesting point. Dr. Page just said in the last segment something that I want to stress and get your opinion on, John, and that is, you know, basically the COVID lockdowns, et cetera, and now all of the hullabaloo about the inoculations, et cetera, are actually doing more harm than the psychological harm that's being done to our business community now, even with the COVID. Any comments on that?
Well, now you've got this ideal out there, you know, this COVID vaccination, which is very confusing to a lot of us. A lot of the doctors I work with, a lot of the people that I know, a lot of psychologists and therapists, because typically when you have a vaccine, you know that there's potential for what they call viral shedding. The inoculation itself may potentially stimulate your exposing other people to the virus in limited amounts for a few days after taking the virus, whether it's for the flu virus, unless you know it's a dead virus type, mm-hmm. Or dead vaccine type thing. And so they tell you to wear your mask and continue wearing it, but it's not just for a few days or for a few, you know, maybe 2 weeks afterward, but forever. They say you get the vaccine, you still have to wear it. So it kind of defeats the purpose of having a vaccine. So you got people who thought, okay, I can get my vaccine, I can quit wearing this mask, and that doesn't happen. And then you use this whole thing of cognitive dissonance. You talk yourself into this and say, no, I have to wear the mask for whatever reason. And you're kind of going against common knowledge and science that has been around for 50 or more years about how vaccines work, and all to demonstrate compliance. It's really a bizarre thing. But now you have this social morality bump. You talk yourself into it and say you're better than those people who aren't wearing masks or who aren't getting vaccines. And so all of a sudden, you start essentially acting negatively to other people because either they don't have the virus or vaccine, or they don't have a mask, or some combination of that, and somehow put yourself above them. But at the same time, you're trapped in this mechanism of following orders, and you're still not back to normal. And you've gone through, and you know, this vaccine is experimental. I mean, it's authorized. It's not an approved vaccine. So it hasn't gone through all the trials that they normally do vaccine. They haven't gone through and checked to see what the viral shedding is like on these vaccines. They haven't run all these tests that often take years. And we don't really know. And that's kind of the conundrum. You know, half the government's telling us this is what you have to do to get normal, but the science doesn't follow through. What they're telling you to do doesn't fit what other vaccines have done.
Right.
And I get these examples. People are, oh, well, there's viral variants that have shown up in third world countries. And one of them showed up in, I think New York, another one another country, all this. And I'm just like, you know, we always have viral variants. And
right.
One of the whole things we try to do is get the vaccine, and you hit the main form of that virus, and it's going to make the other variants less powerful. But again, they don't have the science behind them. They haven't done all the research to make it a fully approved vaccine to know what that's going to look like. So we have to convince ourselves that it was worth the risk. It was worth the time. It was worth the pain, maybe getting sick from them. And in some cases, getting blood clots and strokes and some people dying before, you know, we actually know if it's a good a vaccine or not. So it's a very crazy thing. Yes, it does decrease your risk if you're getting it. Yes, if you're in a potentially challenged immune system category and potentially debilitated in an at-risk group, you should take the virus. I'm telling you, it's better than not having it if you're in those groups. But the rest of us have some serious questions to ask ourselves. And, you know, now they're going through and they're starting to shame people on national television, on the news outlet.
Right.
And, oh, and so that creates this whole other emotional side of things that the COVID restrictions have already built. And now there's a whole other side that just kind of builds on top of it.
It's Dr. Huber, just a quick interruption. We're down to about 30 seconds here, sir. Go ahead and wrap it up.
Well, I think what we need to do, again, if you are at risk, get the virus or get the vaccine. I don't want people not getting it when they really need it. Otherwise, the rest of us have to really sit back and ask, what is it we're trying to do? Understand that you have to get on with your life. And until you get on with your life, you're going to be restricted. And if you need to wear a mask, wear the mask. But get moving, get outside, start seeing people. I know it's not what they want you to do. Keep your 6 feet distance, but get out there and start living your life, and you're going to have a lot better emotional stability.
Words of wisdom. Words of wisdom, you guys, from Dr. John Huber. We'll all be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.